Boker Tov, and welcome back to another and ongoing series of Shiurim HaDaf Yomi. We are now in Ketubot Daf Mem Gimel Amud Bet at Mishnah Bet in the fourth parak, and we are still talking about the father's rights, but we have now moved away from the issue of Knas, and we're getting fully into the central area of Kiddushin and of Ketubah and the father's rights. And the Mishnah goes as follows: Hamiareset bito v'gersha ersa v'nit armala ketubata shelo. So if a man betroths his daughter, and she's a ketana or a na'ara, and she is divorced, or she becomes widowed, and the way that it's presented in the Mishnah, we'll pay attention to this in a minute, is if he betroths his daughter, and then she's divorced, and then he betroths his daughter, and she becomes widowed, ketubata shelo. He keeps the ketubah. Now, this is, of course, talking about where she became widowed or divorced as a na'ara. He siyav v'gersha, he siyav nitar mala, but if he married her off and she got divorced, he married her off, and then she became widowed, ketubata shela. In either case, in both cases, she keeps the ketubah, because once she has had nisuin, she is out of his domain, doesn't matter how young she is. Rabbi Yehuda omer, harishana shel av. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees and says the first one of those ketubot, in the case of marriage, does belong to the father. Amrulo, mishesia in levia reshutba. The Chachamim said back to Rabbi Yehuda that the minute he marries her off, he has no more reshut, and so they say any of the ketubot, the minute she's become married, any ketubah that comes to her stays with her. Now, the Gemara immediately observes the narrative told in the Mishnah, Tama de Hisiya v'gersha, right? Hisiya v'darmala. In other words, the only reason this plays out is because he married her off and she became divorced, and then he married her off and she became widowed. Alanit armala trezimni tulo chazilin suve. If she became widowed twice, then she can't be married anymore. There is a famous machloket, we've already seen it, between Rebbe and Rosh Gamliel, whether or not a woman is considered a katlanit after two husbands die or three husbands die. In any case, whatever the number is, at that point she may no longer marry. Rebbe holds that it's two, and therefore the Tana here seems to subtly be taking the position of Rebbe, and therefore does not give a more extreme example of she married and became widowed, and then as if to say that there's still going to be another marriage. Okay, Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Now this goes back to the Mishnah. Rishona shel Av. And this, of course, the main focus we're going to discuss in this podcast is Rabbi Yehuda's approach, which is the first ketubah belongs to the father. My Tamid Rabbi Yehuda. So why does Rabbi Yehuda take this position against the Chachamim? So Rabbi Rav Yosef Tamri Tavayu, they gave the solution, but there's two versions of their solution. The first version, which we will reject, reads as follows: Ho'il mishat erusin zachah bahen av. After all, the father already has claims on that money from the time of erusin. In other words, the first time she gets married, first she was betrothed, and it's at the moment of betrothal that there is already a claim on the money of the ketubah, and at that point, when she was only betrothed, she was still under the domain of the father. Now, Meitiv Rava. Rava comes along in the next generation and says, we have a statement that says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer HaRishona Shel Av, and this is an expansion on our Mishnah, Umodeh Rabbi Yehuda B'ma'areset B'tok Shiktana U'Vagrav Yechar Kach Niseit. Rabbi Yehuda agrees that if the father betroths his daughter off in the first marriage as a ktana, and then she becomes a bogeret, and then she becomes married, and then becomes divorced, a widowed, she'ein lavi reshutba. The father does not have a claim on the ketubah. Amai? Why don't we say the same thing that Rabban of Yosef supposedly said, which is that the father has a claim from the moment of Erusin, and at the moment of Erusin she was a ketana, and if the claim to the ketubah dates back to the moment of Erusin, then even in this case he should have it. If we have a statement from Rabban of Yosef, here's how it should really read. Rabban of Yosef, ho'il reshuto nichtavin. Since, after all, the ketubah is written while she's still in his reshut, meaning the ketubah is written when she's married, when she's getting married, and that ketubah is written while she's still in his reshut. So imagine now the first case, our case, which is a girl is a ketana, and she is married. When the ketubah is written, she is still in his reshut until she's actually handed over for marriage, which is after the ketubah is written. However, in the second case, the one we brought as a counter from the Braita, where Rabbi Yehuda agrees that if she became a bogeret and then married, well, at that point when the ketubah is written, she's already a bogeret, and that's why the father will not collect the ketubah. Now, a parenthetic question comes up, which is going to occupy the rest of our attention here, which is the issue of gviyah, of collection. And let me just clarify, put a little note on the page, but to clarify, when a person incurs a debt, all of their property, depending on the kind of debt, but normally all of their property become collateral or mishuabad for that debt. However, the sequencing of debts is very critical, because if, let's say that a person incurs a debt on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, he takes out a loan, or he marries somebody and becomes obligated in ketubah, or his animals cause damage, a chayiv and a zikin, and then, let's say he sells some of his property on Rosh Chodesh Iyar, a month later. And then, the person comes to collect the debt, or the ketubah, or the damages, in the middle of Sivan, and the fellow has no property left. They can go back to the guy who bought the property in Rosh Chodesh Iyar and say, the stuff that you bought was mishuabad. That's only if the debtor has no property left. The stuff you bought was mishuabad. It was held in collect. It was a lien against our debt, and now we're collecting it, and they can collect it from him. And if in the original sale he had achrayut nechasim, then he can come back to our friend, the seller, and say, you owe me back the purchase price because the property was taken from me because of a debt you incurred. Now, all of that becomes significant here because we are playing with the possibility that ketubah kicks in from the moment of erusin or from the moment of nisuin. So which is the date at which ketubah becomes effective? Meaning, if a girl is betrothed on Rosh Chodesh Nisan and then is married on Rosh Chodesh Elul 5 months later, and in the intervening time, the bridegroom's property was sold or other obligations fell upon it, Does her obligation kick back to Rosh Chodesh Nisan and take priority? Or does her obligation only begin Rosh Chodesh Elul, her claim only begin Rosh Chodesh Elul, and take a backseat to any other claims or any other debts that may have happened in the meantime? So that's the question. Migva me'emat gavya, from when does she collect? And from what date does the collection become effective? Amar Rav Huna. So Rav Huna says, Maneh matay min ha'irusin. We have to remember that the base ketubah is maneh, if she's already married, matayim, okay, this is Mishnah in the first parak, 200 if she's a betulah, getting married for the first time. So that maneh matayim, which on the page I represented as 100/200, that is the base ketubah, and that goes back to the moment of erusin, because by the way, if a man divorces his wife min erusin, he still does have to pay that part of the ketubah. Tosefet min anisuin, but the tosefet, meaning whatever he adds on to the ketubah of his own volition, that only kicks in from the nisuin. So let's say that the ketubah was 200, when he gets married, and he adds another 200 because he loves her so much and he wants to show, and the families are trading sheep and whatever they're doing, they add all of that in, and all of that comes into the ketubah. It's called tosefet ketubah. Now, when he dies, she comes to collect. According to Rav Huna, she can collect the first 200 of the ketubah from any property that the fellow owned at the time of erusin. And even if subsequently someone else bought it, she can come claim it. But the extra money, she can only claim from the date of nisuin. And therefore, if at the time of nisuin it was already gone, the extra money does not seize on that. Now, Rav Rasi Amar, Echadzev Echadzev min ha-nisuin, he says that both of them go to the date of nisuin. Now, the real question here is Rav Huna's shita. Umiyam Rav Huna Hachi, since when does Rav Huna say that in such a case the debt goes back to the time of Erusin? Vayitmar, Hotzia Alav, Shtei Ktuvot. Let's say that a woman comes to the Beit Din and she has two Ktuvot. Man's dead or the man's divorced, and she brings two Ktuvot. Hachat Shal Matam, Hachat Shal Shlosh Miot. One is 200 and one is 300. That's the case. Now, Rav Huna adds to that, as if Rav Huna, Batal Igvot Matayim Govam Yisman Rishon, Shlosh Miot Govam Yisman Sheni. The assumption of this case is she brings two ketubot. One is dated, let's say, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and that is 200. The other one is Rosh Chodesh Iyar, and that's 300. So Rav Huna says, if she wants to come collect 200, she can collect it all the way back to Rosh Chodesh Nisan, which means that if all the assets are depleted, she can go back to anybody who got the property from them after Rosh Chodesh Nisan and claim she has a prior claim. But if she wants to collect Shlosh Miot, she can only go back to Rosh Chodesh Iyar, to the later date. Now, Vimita, if Rav Huna's approach is as we read it in our case, which is that the Maneh Matayim goes back to Erusin and the rest goes back to Nisuin, then apply the same thing here. Tigma Matayim is on Rishon, Omeyam is on Sheni. She should collect Matayim from, in this last case, you should collect matayim from the earlier date, and then the extra 100, because there's 300 on the second tubah, the extra 100 from the second date. In other words, she shouldn't have this kind of an alternative where either you collect 200 earlier or 300 later. She should get the best of both worlds. She could be able to collect 300, and 200 should be from the earlier date, just as here. So we turn around and say that the case of a single ketubah with the assumption of debt at Erusin is not the same as two ketubot. Why? Well, we'll argue as follows. Velitamech, based on that reasoning, tibi chamesh meor kulam. Why doesn't she collect all 500? 200 from this and 300 from that. Matayim yizman rishon tlat miami shidman sheni. Let her collect 200 from the earlier date and 300 from the later date. Ela chamesh meor maitam alogavya. Why doesn't she collect 500? Which, of course, we know she's not going to do. Kemen lo katavla, because he did not write in the second tubah, tziveti v'osefik lach tlat mea amatayim. He said, I have decided and added on to you 300 onto the 200. He didn't write that. Therefore, the second tubah is clearly not an add-on to the first, but rather a replacement. Hachikam arla, what did he write? Im izman rishon gaviat. Why did he write the second ketubah? Because he's saying, if you want to collect from the earlier date, gavi matayim, you only get 200. Im izman sheni gaviat, if you're willing to accept the later date, then gavi tlat miah, then you have 300. And therefore we see from the way what he left out of the second ketubah, that he did not mean it to be an addition to the first, but rather an alternative to the first. So achanami, in a time of the logavia, that's why she does not collect 200 from the first and 100 from the second. But look at Tavla Osefi Lachmai on a time. He also did not write in the second tubah, and I'm making this 300 to add it as 100 to the 200. He just wrote it as 300. Achuli achilte l'shibud akama. She clearly has been mochel her earlier shibud when she accepted the ketubah and said, I'm happy to get the larger amount, even though it may put me at a disadvantage in case during the intervening time some of the property has been sold or in some other way disposed of. Okay, good. So that's why Rav Huna could still say in our case that the manim time goes back to the time of Erusin and the rest goes to the time of Nisuin, because there it's not a question of two ketubot and what was written, but rather in our ketubah, what do we write? We write, I'm chayiv to you matayim midoraita, in the case of matayim. And I'm adding another whatever it is, which means that the addition is not replacing the original, but is really an addition to the original. Good. Now, Amar Mar, let's look back at Rav Huna's statement. Ibaya b'hai gavya, ibaya b'hai gavya. Rav Huna said she can collect from either ketubah, and it's her choice, but not automatically the second ketubah. Lema pligad Rav Nachman, so let us claim that this is at odds with Rav Nachman's ruling. To Amar Rav Nachman, shnei shtarot hayotzin b'zachar zef. You have two shtarot, one coming on the same field, say all of the same field, let's say, that come one after the other, meaning one is dated earlier, one is dated later. Bitel sheni atarishon. Automatically, the first shtar is invalidated, and you can only use the second one. Why? Because the assumption is, if you wrote another shtar, that means that clearly there's something wrong with the first shtar, we've agreed to write it differently, or whatever it may be, and we'll see. Now, that sounds like it's at odds with Rav Huna, because Rav Huna said that she has the choice which ketubah to use. But that's not the case, because Lav Mi'in Marla, didn't we comment on that statement of Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Papa, Umod Rav Nachman, Di Osif Pedikla, V'Tosefik Katve. Rav Papa said that Rav Nachman agrees that if he adds anything into the second shtar, it's the Tosefet Katve, he's doing it to add on. So let's say that the first shtar includes a particular field, and the second shtar includes that field, then adds one more half acre, or one more tree, or whatever it may be. Clearly then, the second shtar is just there to give him a little bit more power and not to invalidate the first shtar. So he can choose to take the first shtar and without the tree. Right, which means, and the same thing here. Hachanami in our case also. Haosi flamidi, here he added, and the second star was 300. So clearly, the first star has not been invalidated. The second star is just a better alternative. She chooses the smaller alternative with a little bit more guarantee because it's earlier. Good. So now Gufa, let's look back at Rav Nachman. Amar Rav Nachman shtei shtarot yotzin bezachar zeh bitel sheni atarishon. And Amar Rav Papa modu Rav Nachman da yosif beidikla tosefet katvei. This we've already had. Now, let's look at that and make the following observation. Pshita, let's not talk about a case where he added anything to the second shtar, but where the second shtar is different in quality. Pshita, it's obvious that Rishon v'mecha v'sheni v'matana, if the first shtar was a mechira, I'm selling you this property, and the second one was the same property, what is a gift? Liapot kochu dechatavle. Clearly, the first one has not been invalidated because the second one was written in order to give him more power. Why? Mishum dina de bar mitzra. Dina de bar mitzra, as I note at the bottom of the page, is the following halacha. It's based on the pasuk vasita yashar vatov. You have to do that which is fine and upright. When you sell property, the right of first refusal, alpi halacha, has to go to the neighbors whose property abuts the property that you are selling. But that only applies to a sale and not to a gift. Therefore, I can give property to anybody I want to. But as far as selling, I have to go to the bar mitzra, the person who's on the boundary. So therefore, if I'm selling it to this guy, and he's not one of my neighbors, in order to give him the opportunity to rebut the neighbors who have a claim, I also write it to him as a gift. And therefore, clearly, the second shtar is not canceling out the first. He still owes me the money. It's not a gift. But I'm doing it to him to strengthen his power in court. And certainly, if the first shtar was a matana and the second was a mecher, was a sale, why did I write the second one as a sale? So that he will have recourse in the case of balchov. Let's say as follows. I give somebody a piece of some of my land. And it turns out that I had borrowed money against that land earlier. The Baal Chov can come and collect it from him, and he has no recourse to me. But if, on the other hand, I sell him the land with Achrayut, as I mentioned earlier, and then the Baal Chov, the creditor, comes and collects the land from him, he has recourse to come back to me. So if I wrote the first shtar as a matana, and then I turned around and wrote it as a mecher, I wrote it as a mecher not to uproot the original matana. I originally intended a matana. But I want to strengthen his ability. I want to make him feel comfortable with this gift to let him know that in case some creditor came and takes the land from you because I have a debt that predates this gift, I'm going to call it a mecher also so that you will then have the power to come back to me and get the money for that field or somehow get and be recompensed. So clearly I'm not canceling it out, which means the principle is that if I've changed anything about in the second shtar in any way made it better, then clearly I'm not uprooting the first shtar, but simply broadening your rights as a buyer or recipient of the field. Good. So now, Ella. Ishtem mecher or shtem matana, but if they're both mecher and both matana, and again the second one gives him no more than the first one, bitel sheni tarishon. That's where Rav Nachman says the second one cancels the first. Question is why? My tama. Now Rafram amar emar oduye odule. Rafram says, you know what must have happened? Must have happened is that the buyer agrees this shtar is really forged. Let's write a new shtar, and therefore we know the first shtar is forged. He can't use it anymore, and that's why there's a second shtar. Rav Acha says, no, what happened is that the buyer is mochel, he's forgiving the shibud that he has on the land from that date and accepting a later date. Person sells a property to somebody else and then comes to him, calls him up a month later and says, listen, can we rewrite the shtar for today? I have a legal tangle, you'll help me out. So therefore, either way, the first shtar is no good. Well, that's not exactly true. According to Rafram, the first shtar really is no good because we are assessing that the first shtar was invalid. In the second case, in the second version, the first shtar really was good and we've just sort of rewritten the deal. But the first month, or however long it was between the shtarot, was a valid ownership on the part of the buyer or recipient of the gift. Now, my benayah, what is the difference in practice, in practical terms, between Rafram's approach and Rav Acha's approach? Ike benayah, first of all, oru isaide. First thing is, what do we do with the witnesses on the first shtar? According to Rafram, they are now invalid witnesses. We say that they forged the shtar. According to Rav Acha, they're not invalid. They didn't do anything wrong. Just the seller is asked to renegotiate the deal, as it were. Just the date. The second is lishlume pere, is whether the buyer or the recipient of the gift now has to pay back all the benefits he got from the field during that intervening time. According to Rafram, he has to because the first shtar was invalid. According to Rav Acha, he certainly doesn't have to because the first shtar was valid. We've just renegotiated the date. Ulataska, the third thing is who pays the property tax during that intervening time. If the buyer paid the property tax, then according to Rafram, he can now come back to the seller and say, you have to now pay me back for that property tax because it really was yours that whole time. According to Vacha, they wouldn't have such a claim. Now, go back to Ketubah. My halvi alad to Ketubah. What's the halacha with Ketubah? Toshma, damar yudam ha-shmuel, mishumar belazer, rabbi Shimon. Interesting, we find the same machloka Rav Huna Rav Asi goes back to the Tanaim. Rav Elazar Rav Shimon says that mane matayim min hayirusin v'tosef min hanisuin, like Rav Huna. Chachamim omrim, ze echad ze ve echad ze min hanisuin, The halacha is like chachamim, followed later by Rav Asi the Amora, that all of the money collected goes back to the date of nisuin, and kach halacha. Okay, everybody should have a wonderful day, and we will pick up Mirtz Hashem in the next podcast on Daf Mem Dalet Amud Aleph with the third Mishnah in the Perek.